and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan and the rest of Africa this Thursday, February 6, 2025. Internally displaced persons in South Sudan's Unity State staged a protest.
There are people who are leaving now because of MSF. If MSF leaves us, then of course, definitely it is a death that only that we have not yet been buried.
And U.S. congressional Democratic leadership warned President Donald Trump they will use upcoming government funding talks as leverage to fight the administration's changes at federal agencies.
We will fight their violations of separation of powers. We will fight their violations of our Constitution of the United States of America. We will not shut up.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A peaceful protest erupted this week at a camp for internally displaced persons in Unity State following a decision by the French medical charity Médecins Sans Frontières, or Doctors Without Borders, to relocate their hospital from the camp to Bentiu Town. For VOA News, Sheila Pony reports from Juba.
The Bentiu camp is a home to an estimated 145,000 IDPs and 20,000 returnees. Many residents fled to the camp because of violence and insecurity in Bentiu. Niall Charles, a community member in the camp, says the relocation of health facilities from the camp to Bentiu could cut off families seek medical assistance.
This peaceful demonstration is something that was under plan because the IDPs that has been us, almost 17,000, we have been gathering here since morning for the sake of seeing the MSF trying to transit the distance that we have. No one will have accessibility to Bentiu.
The Bentiu State Hospital is about 7.5 kilometers. The new location of MSF's hospital is too far away from IDP camps. Charles emphasized the role MSF plays in managing critical health conditions like HIV, AIDS, and tuberculosis, often providing not just treatment, but essential nutrition.
You know, most of the critical health conditions are almost happening in the IDP camp. So it would be good if MSF can also continue maintaining to deliver the service to the community.
Makair Peter, community leader at the camp, says most vulnerable groups will not be able to access services at the new location of MSF's hospital in town.
The distance from Bentiu State Hospital to here is about 7.5 kilometers, which is 3 hours walk, and it would be very difficult for acute patient to reach Bentiu State Hospital.
MSF has provided secondary health care and a reliable supply of essential medicine to the IDPs in the camp. Peter says the consequences of the new hospital location could be dire for internally displaced persons.
It will be more than worse because the life here, there are people who are leaving now because of MSF. If MSF leaves us, then of course, definitely it is a death that only that we have not yet been buried.
The only means of transport we have here is wheelbarrow. When it happens at night, we carry wheelbarrow, patients with wheelbarrow to MSF. But it will be very difficult for them, for the community, to carry people with wheelbarrow from here up to Bentiu town, which is 7.5 kilometers walk.
Dr. Kedende Chong is Director General for Preventive Health Services and Emergency Response at the National Ministry of Health. Chong says most of the IDPs are not ready to return to their homes in Bentiu town.
That the people don't want to leave the camp. It's not they don't want MSF. Because MSF was not there to stay permanently. MSF is a humanitarian partner, a response to support the government and the populations that are affected in emergency. What we know so far, Bentiu, as the State Minister of Health, that is running a key service to the people, including a network of primary healthcare units, primary healthcare centers.
Dr. Chong says healthcare facilities outside the camp are accessible, adding the government of South Sudan encourages IDPs to return to their respective locations where healthcare services are available.
The time has come and the government has already called upon the IDPs at the POCs to go back to their respective locations. We have health facilities outside there. Should they remain there, they will have to have the opportunity to go out and access the health facilities that are available within Bantu. They will not be denied access. They will be treated. They will receive the services like any other civilians that are there within Bantu town.
James Mithwari, MSF's project coordinator for the Bantu Hospital Transitions, says his group is not relocating from Bantu town.
We would like to clarify that while MSF is shifting service location, we are not leaving Bantu. Rather, our aim is to strengthen the local health care system and ensure long-term sustainability. We understand that change can create uncertainty, and we appreciate the feedback we have received from the various stakeholders we have met during the planning phase and now during the transition. We would like to reiterate that this transition is designed to strengthen and maintain comprehensive care health services through a partnership with the Minister of Health.
The protesters are demanding that MSF reconsider its decision and continue providing health services within the IDP camp. They have appealed to MSF, other humanitarian partners, and the government of South Sudan to address their urgent care needs. For VOA News, I am Sheila Aponi, reporting from Juba.
From Juba, we move to the United States, where the congressional Democratic leadership warned President Donald Trump this week they will use upcoming government funding talks as leverage to fight the administration's changes at U.S. government agencies, such as the U.S. Agency for International Development, the nation's lead provider of humanitarian aid overseas. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more.
From protecting Amazon rainforests to caring for Myanmar refugees and housing Ukrainians fleeing the war against Russia, the absence of U.S. assistance is being felt around the world. In Washington this week, Democratic lawmakers protested outside the now closed headquarters of the lead U.S. aid agency and outside the U.S. Capitol. Cory Booker is a Democratic senator.
We will fight their violations of separation of powers. We will fight their violations of our Constitution of the United States of America. We will not shut up. We will stand up. We will speak up. We will rise up.
Earlier this week, the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, was moved under the control of Secretary of State Marco Rubio, and almost all its employees put on leave, following an executive order from President Donald Trump freezing U.S. foreign assistance pending review. Jonathan Jackson is a Democratic congressman.
Now we're seeing the most powerful man in the world, Donald J. Trump, and we're seeing the richest man in the world, Elon Musk, now take money and food from the poorest woman and the poorest man on earth.
Congressional Republicans say Trump is exercising broad presidential authority to reevaluate government agencies. Trump is accomplishing this through Elon Musk, a multi-billionaire whom he put in charge of the Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE, whose aim is to reduce federal spending. John Thune is Senate Majority Leader.
I don't think they're closing an agency, but I do think they have the right to review funding and how those decisions are made and what priorities are being funded. I think that's probably true of any administration when they come in. There are lots of programs authorized and funded through that agency, some of which I think are operating in the way in which they were intended, some which aren't.
One analyst told VOA the situation is unprecedented in the United States. Claire Finkelstein is a professor of law and philosophy at the University of Pennsylvania.
Arguably, it's a real violation of separation of powers for the executive branch to try to shut down agencies completely that Congress has brought into existence and that Congress endows and appropriates funds for, even if the executive branch has quite a lot of discretion with regard to how to operationalize those funds and how the agency is going to function.
Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer said Tuesday he's supportive of efforts to eliminate fraud and abuse, but criticized the speed and secrecy of the process.
Whatever DOGE is doing, it's not democracy. We know what democracy's like. It's out in the open. It's not secret.
Democrats have pledged to stall votes on Trump's cabinet nominees and leverage their votes on a new government spending bill to protest the changes at USAID. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
President Donald Trump's point person for making rapid changes at the U.S. governmental agencies is Elon Musk, the chief executive of car maker Tesla and aerospace company SpaceX. Congressional Democrats say that the Trump-backed multi-billionaire's attempt to reduce federal government spendings is wrong. Michelle Quinn looks at what Musk has been doing in Washington.
A protest outside a federal agency in Washington this week focused on the work of Elon Musk, President Donald Trump's designee for shrinking the U.S. government. Democratic Senator Chris Murphy.
The people get to decide how we defend the United States of America. The people get to decide how their taxpayer money is spent. Elon Musk does not get to decide.
Musk is the world's richest man and the chief executive of electric vehicle firm Tesla and aerospace company SpaceX. He also owns other companies, including the social media platform X, formerly known as Twitter. Since Trump's inauguration, Musk, as the leader of the newly created Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE, has gotten down to work cutting what he and President Trump see as costly federal programs.
We will win! We will win!
Musk's team has reportedly gained access to the Treasury Department's payment systems, raising alarms, and has sought control of the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, which provides humanitarian and other aid to more than 100 countries. That's where the protests happened this week. Democratic Representative Don Beyer.
President Trump directed his corrupt billionaire friend, Elon Musk, to ransack a critical agency of the U.S. government.
Trump, however, reiterated his support for Musk.
It's something that he feels very strongly about, and I'm impressed because he's running, obviously, a big company.
Elon Musk said what he discovered at USAID isn't salvageable.
As we dug into USAID, it became apparent that what we have here is not an apple with a worm in it, but we have actually just a ball of worms.
Congressional Democrats dispute that and say it is wrong that Musk has so much power and little accountability and oversight, especially given that SpaceX has contracts with the federal government. Democratic Senator Patty Murray.
An unelected, unaccountable billionaire with expansive conflicts of interest, deep ties to China, and an indiscreet axe to grind against perceived enemies is hijacking our nation's most sensitive financial data systems and its checkbook.
But Trump says that the White House is providing the necessary oversight to Musk's work.
Where we think there's a conflict or there's a problem, we won't let him go near it. But we're trying to shrink government, and he can probably shrink it as well as anybody else, if not better.
In his unpaid role as a special government employee, Musk is permitted to work no more than 130 days a year. Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, more than 400 civilians are rendered jobless after French troops left Chad. Find out why after the break. You're are listening to South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America. U.S. Border Patrol agents are detaining undocumented migrants as part of President Donald Trump's crackdown on illegal immigration. Many of those arrests have been in California, where one city is trying to break with the state and cooperate with federal immigration agencies. Jinia Dulot reports from Huntington Beach.
California is a state that limits local police cooperation with federal immigration enforcement, barring them from acting as immigration agents or making arrests solely on civil immigration violations. Within this so-called sanctuary state, the city of Huntington Beach has declared itself a non-sanctuary city for illegal immigration for the prevention of crime. Mayor Pat Burns says cooperating with federal immigration enforcement makes his city safer.
If an undocumented person commits some kind of crime, especially a heinous crime, I want them removed. I want us to have every level of law enforcement to keep our community as safe as possible. And if you take that link out, that level of law enforcement out, we might be releasing somebody who we don't want back into our community.
My Doe is with the Harbor Institute, which provides research and policy support to local pro-immigrant organizations. She says there is no evidence that sanctuary cities are less safe.
Study after study has proven that sanctuary cities not only don't increase crime, they actually reduce crime. And so for Huntington Beach politicians to be invested in trying to promote this anti-sanctuary policy actually shows that they're not invested in promoting public safety.
Local restaurant owner Charlie Zabla backs Huntington Beach being a non-sanctuary city.
By crossing the borders and coming here illegally, you already committed a crime. You broke the law, and that's not acceptable. I came here the legal way. I did the right thing right. I waited in line. I paid my dues. It took me 12 years to become a citizen.
Unlawful presence in the U.S. is a civil violation, not a criminal offense. Illegal entry is a misdemeanor. Re-entering the country illegally after being removed is a felony, punishable by up to 2 years in prison. President Donald Trump's executive order, called Protecting the American People Against Invasion, would deny federal funds to all sanctuary jurisdictions. It is not yet clear what federal funds would be cut to which jurisdictions, including California. Making itself a non-sanctuary city is a largely symbolic move for Huntington Beach, since they don't control local law enforcement, says University of California, Irvine law professor Annie Lai.
This, you know, declaration by the city is going to have limited impact because the cities don't have their own jails. Generally, the entity that controls the jails is the Orange County Sheriff's Department. That's a different decision maker.
When California enacted its sanctuary law in 2017, the first Trump administration argued in court that it interfered with immigration authorities enforcing federal law. A circuit court of appeals ruled for the state, and the U.S. Supreme Court declined to review the case. Jenya Dulo, VOA News, Huntington Beach.
From Huntington Beach, we go to Chad, where more than 400 civilians are rendered jobless by the departure of French troops from Chad. And they are asking the government to hire them and provide the job benefits they had when they worked for the French. The last French troops left Chad on January 31st, following an order by President Mohamed Idriss Déby. Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from the neighboring Cameroon.
Chadian officials say hundreds of civilians who were employed by the French assembled in the capital N'Djamena on Monday to ask the government to immediately give them jobs. French forces departed Chad at the order of the Central African States President, Field Marshal Mohamed Idriss Déby. The last French troops left the country on Friday after handing over the Kosei military base in N'Djamena, which they had occupied for about 70 years. Earlier, French forces handed over two other bases at Faya-Lajo and Abéché. Mbaye Toubam Bruno is the spokesperson for civilians who worked at the French military base. He spoke to VOA from N'Djamena via a messaging app.
Le licenciement que nous avons subi, qualifié de licenciement économique par l'inspection du travail.
He says Chad's government should immediately recruit them because at least half of the over 400 Chadians who lost their jobs as French troops departed are already in precarious situations that do not permit them to support their families. Mbaye Toubam says it is imperative for Chad's government to guarantee the security and social well-being of all former workers at French military bases by making sure each and every one of them has a job. The former workers mostly held jobs in hospitals, schools, and dining facilities that served the French troops. Others provided humanitarian assistance to those who lived around the bases. Mbaye Toubam said a majority of the workers were asked to leave French military bases on November 28 when Chad announced an end to military cooperation with France. The workers say they have remained without jobs and salaries and cannot take care of their medical bills. Aziz Mohamed Saleh is a member of a Chadian commission overseeing the dismantling of military agreements between Paris and N'Djamena. He is also Chad's former communications minister and government spokesperson. He says Chad's president, Field Marshal Mohamed Idriss Déby, ordered the commission to make a census of all civilians who worked with French troops in the three bases of Kosei, Faya-Lajo, and Abéché. He says after the census, the commission will propose a list of workers whose services are needed to the government of Chad for recruitment. Mohamed spoke on Chad's state TV. He said Déby has asked health and humanitarian workers to continue working in hospitals formerly controlled by French troops. He said he was pleading with the former workers to have confidence in their government, which he said is doing everything possible to protect their rights and provide jobs despite the difficult economic situation the country is facing. The workers said that under the French, they earned an average salary of more than $130 per month. Before leaving Chad last week, General Pascal Yanni, the commander of French forces in Africa, told Chadian State TV that their departure was abrupt. Paris has not said anything concerning the former workers, Chad's government says. The workers say the decision to order out the French may have been patriotic for the government, but that it undermined their well-being and did not take into consideration the needs of several thousand civilians who had health care and education thanks to the French troops' presence. Moki Edwin Kinzeka, VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Living with a disability presents unique challenges, but some living with a disability say resilience, determination, and support can help individuals thrive. From Maputo, Mozambique, reporter Amaralis Guli has this story of two Mozambicans who refuse to let their disability define their lives.
Delfina Nyantumbu is studying education and social action at Mozambique's Pedagogical University of Maputo. She has a condition called cerebral palsy that affects her ability to move and balance. Despite this, Delfina started an association called Flicker of Inclusion Association to help people like her.
I have an association that helps people like me. I help them to realize that they can go to school, that they can walk and have a normal life.
Julia Francisco, Delfina's mother, has supported her along the way.
I got feedback from parents
saying that Delfina came to take us out of the deep end. We didn't know what to do with our son, but with Delfina's visit, we were able to see that our son is also capable.
It helped me to want to go back to school because I had already given up, but she made me understand that I am capable and that I can go far.
Nyantumbu says feedback like this keeps her going.
Girls with disabilities have faced more difficulties first because they are women and then because they have disability, but they can do thousands of things.
Rafael Bata is visually impaired but found refuge in music as his sight faded. Inspired and mentored by blind Mozambican musician Isau Menezes, Bata learned how to play the guitar and formed a band made up of visually impaired people. He earns a degree in journalism and works as an advocacy coordinator and presenter on Death TV, a Mozambican non-governmental, non-profit organization that promotes inclusive social participation.
It is still a big challenge to be a person with a disability because society still doesn't respect the rights of people with disabilities.
Despite obstacles, Bata and Nyantumbu says they are committed to challenging stereotypes and building more inclusive communities.
Being disabled doesn't make you incapable. It doesn't make you better or worse than anyone else.
Even though there is still that stereotype that people with disabilities are invalid, I fight against that.
Bata created a theater group for people with disabilities as a way to continue fighting for the disabled. Nyantumbu says she will continue to work towards a future without limitation for people with disabilities. Amarilis Gule, VOA News, Maputo, Mozambique.
That's all we prepared for you this Thursday, February 6, 2025. We now leave you with Oliver Mutukuzu and the song Wenge Mambo. Been listening to Oliver Mtukuzu and the song Wenge Mambo. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 3 here in Washington. For more information on our programs, log on to www.voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and the engineer, Peter Heinle, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.